It must be really hard to have a healthy, balanced mindset out there on the internet right now because of how absurd some of the content is getting.
There is a pursuit of wanting to be better, to be more alive feeling. When it comes to beauty, I feel like it's so tricky. If all women were just had their natural ways, a lot of women would feel less bad about themselves.
Life doesn't always go the way that we want it to. Just being crunchy just for the hell of it can cause suffering. Just in the exact same way, being so conventional and mindless that you never question anything.
It is tricky being a working mother. And it was tricky being a working person going through fertility too. I do think we have vehicles of growth that push our soul to become a better version of itself or to realize something.
Working as a mom without full-time childcare or them in a normal school is the craziest balancing thing that I've ever had to do.
All of these conversations have a similar theme, which is there's extremes on both ends. How do we find this happy medium in the middle?
If your heart aches for a baby, whether you want a baby someday or you've already been on the journey and it hasn't been as easy as you had hoped, I want you to know that you don't have to do it alone. I created Womanhood Wellness for women just like you. Inside of this amazing membership, you have step-by-step doctor-designed blueprints unique to your womanhood type based on the season that you're in. You have access to order your own labs. You have over 22 amazing courses and growing that I have created for you, all about breaking up with birth control, balancing your hormones, preparing your body for pregnancy, optimizing your fertility, and navigating the root causes of infertility. I have support for pregnancy loss, for navigating integrative IVF, for supporting your partner throughout this process, as well as information about libido, which is one of my favorite things to teach about, because when it comes to womanhood, it's all connected. On top of the amazing content and resources, such as being able to order your own supplements and the protocols that I have, all of the step-by-step checklists of exactly what to do within each lesson in a basic, intermediate, and advanced path, I also have amazing support inside of the membership. Every month, you get a live Q&A with me. I have monthly masterclasses taught by me and other amazing practitioners. And bi-weekly, we have connection calls where you get to really connect with women and share and feel seen. We have seasonal circles that are unique to the different seasons of womanhood. For example, if you are breaking up with birth control or you're struggling with libido or you are trying to conceive, maybe you're going through IVF or you've had a pregnancy loss, all of these different scenarios require different support. And so these circles put you together with women just like you so that you can really connect and make long-lasting friendships. You'll finally understand your cycle, your labs, your body, your fertility, and you'll feel empowered in your womanhood journey. So if this sounds exciting to you, I encourage you to go to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to sign up and save 20% on your first month. Again, head to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to save 20%. I can't wait to see you inside. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood support you've been looking for from a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. In today's episode, Dr. Morgan and I break down a lot of nuanced topics around extremes and finding the balance between them. For example, do we do Botox? And what does that even mean? And how do we navigate natural beauty treatments? Are we doing it out of fear or trying to keep up with the Joneses? Are we doing it out of a place of joy and love? How do we navigate food intolerances or toxins out in the world? Are we extreme and never going to a seed oil restaurant? Or how do we navigate parenting and being present with our kids, but also not giving them everything and not having boundaries? How do we navigate relationships and just all the different nuances around some of these big topics? We really break it down and share what we think about it. And I think it's an amazing episode that you guys are really going to enjoy. So let's get started. All righty. I'm so excited for this conversation where we are going to just dive into some of the nuances and the gray spaces on some of these topics. We had a box and we opened it up for Q&As from people. And a lot of the things that we got were questions around things that don't have a simple answer that you can answer in 30 seconds on Instagram. And
There's just things that have come up in our own lives too that I feel like deserve more conversation. So I guess we'll just
start down the line. Yeah. So we've kind of like gathered the ideas, and some of them, you know, they were those sort of easy to answer quick medical questions. And so we kind of filtered those out because what we were looking for, not that we won't ever circle back and answer those questions at some point, but we were looking for more conversational style ones. So if you wrote in and we're not answering your question, it's because it's just not what we were trying to find for this particular episode. So like the first one, which I guess is like a little bit off the beaten path for our normal conversation, we're going to get back onto kind of our normal things, but like we could talk about Botox. So
yeah,
I think that this is a very hot topic right now. And it's interesting because I think that there is this like unwritten rule, or this is the way that it at least feels to me as somebody who is never going to get Botox, is that it's like, you can't talk badly about it. Do you feel that?
Yeah. Well, just like, this is what I want to say. There are so many subcultures within the culture. And then there's like different cultures and subcultures. Like, for example, there is the culture that's like, embrace yourself. Everything about you is perfect. And there is no need for anything outside of yourself, and like super crunchy, very in the earth. And I love that. And I absolutely love that subculture. But like, I don't really fit in that because I wear makeup. And I feel better about myself when I wear makeup. Not because I need anyone else to see me. It's more about myself. I don't know why. It's just like a confidence thing. And maybe that's a trained thing in society. I don't know where that really comes from. But it's something that I feel okay with. I never feel like, wow, I'm being this anti-feminist person from wearing makeup. I don't know. I wear makeup and I'm okay with it. And I know that then people take that and extrapolate that and go farther, where people say, well, if you're sad about, you know, the way that your boobs look, then just get a boob job. And that's the same thing as wearing makeup, or same thing with Botox of, if you feel better about yourself not having wrinkles, then just do that because you're going to feel better. And where is the line between, I do face exercises every night, you know, and I'm wearing frownies to try to prevent wrinkles, versus taking it one step further into Botox? And it's so tricky. It's so gray. And I think the pursuit of trying to look young, or the pursuit of trying to be different than how we are, is one subculture. There can be this acceptance of exactly how you are. But then there's also this, if that were the case, I would never exercise. We would never eat well to, like, you know, feel a different way. Cause you'd be like, well, I just accept that I have no energy and I'm weak and I can't lift up my baby. And so that's just me accepting it. And I'm just going to sit on this couch because that's my current reality. And that doesn't make sense either. Like, there is a pursuit of wanting to be better, to be stronger, to be more alive feeling. And that's what health is, right? That's why we take supplements and why we eat well and why we get outside and move, so that we can be different maybe than our current state. And when it comes to beauty, I feel like it's so tricky.
Well, it's just getting more and more extreme. Like,
yeah,
you know, for the last couple of years, it's been those eyelashes, which I just despise. Like, I honestly, like, it is, I thought it was going to be over. And I'm sorry if any of the listeners are those that are using those eyelashes, but I cannot. Like,
I know.
I saw a friend the other day who I hadn't seen for a long time. I mean, she's like kind of an acquaintance, but the last time I saw her, she didn't have them on. And then this time she did. And I was like so distracted by them. They were so thick. And I think maybe what happens is that people, it's like a gateway drug. Like, they kind of start using some, and then they want more, they want more, they want more. And it's like, I can barely see your actual eyeballs. Like, I can't even see. How do you blink? Like,
I know.
You know, and it's just, it's almost, it reminds me of the Hunger Games series and the Capitol, the people in the Capitol, and getting so out of touch with what our natural bodies look like. And you're so right. Like, that is not a value to some people. They don't care about what their natural bodies look like. They want their body right now to look in the way that they want. And I think where the line is drawn for me is, where's the negative repercussions? Because getting my hair highlighted twice a year and wearing natural makeup, I don't see repercussions in those. Probably the bigger repercussion is getting my hair highlighted, because I also don't go to like an organic hair person.
I know. Which is like, that is something I wouldn't do. Like, we have different thresholds. Like, I would never go into a normal salon.
Yes, like, exactly. And see, like, when I'm getting mine done by my very conventional girl who I love, I always think of you, because I'm like, Leo would freak out right now with this way that this smells. And in my mind, I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to be okay. It's like an hour. I don't care. Like, it's fine. And it also doesn't cause problems on my body. Like, I don't get a headache. I don't feel like overly sensitive to the sound, the smells, where some people do. But yes, logically in my brain, I should prioritize those organic people because they can get, they can achieve the same look. I just haven't done it yet. But anyway, you know, breast implants have their own negative repercussions. No matter what type you use, there is a incorrect thought out there that the like silicone ones, the gummy bear, the whatever, that there's no issue with those. They're never going to like break down. They're never going to rupture. And it's just not true. And siliconosis or breast implant illness is a real thing. And so there's a very big negative impact that can happen from that. And then with Botox, this is an interesting thing for the in terms of thresholds, because for me, I don't even actually, I know there is negative impacts with Botox and it's a neurotoxin and whatever, but I actually don't even care about that. Personally, the reason why I don't want to do it is because two reasons. One, I feel like we don't know what it's like to have an entire generation of 30-year-olds getting Botox. And then what are they going to look like at 70 and 80? And I know the idea is that it's supposed to be preventative for wrinkles, but it also paralyzes your muscles. So what's going to happen to that muscle over time? We don't know. Maybe nothing. It's totally possible that it's nothing. That to me, I just don't care. I have wrinkles. Like my face is worn. I have smiled. I have laughed. I have done things in my life. I go out in the sun. I just don't care. Okay. But number two, more than anything, I read this article that was about our kids growing up to a generation of mothers who have like fewer or sometimes no facial expression. And specifically our girls growing up and not looking like their moms unless they are doing all of these other things, because their faces are going to age in this kind of a way. And that is something that, and I'm not saying this to shame people, I'm saying it to be like, this is where it was for me. Because I have friends that get Botox and all, you know, and they do it minimally. I have some friends that don't do it minimally at all. And you can never see a single emotional expression on their face. And I think that that is very weird, personally. Like, I think it is very strange. I would never take the opportunity of having a wrinkleless face for also an emotionless face. Yeah. Like, that is not a trade-off worth it to me. I think human connection and being able to like frown and cry and show that I'm upset and then also be like gleeful and happy and joy and surprise and all these things, it's just like, that's part of being human. This was the whole issue with the masks during COVID. Yeah. Was we weren't able to see people's faces. And then now we're paralyzing half our faces and everybody's okay with it. And I just think it's kind of wild. It's sort of a situation. It's like, you know, to each his own, do your thing. I'm not going to judge you. I just think that overall, well, I guess I do sound like I'm judging.
We are judging and that's okay.
Well, I'm not saying like you're stupid. I'm just saying consider these other things. Also, like it's normal for us to have wrinkles. Like what sort of strange thing are we trying to fool? Like, are we trying to pretend like we don't? Oh, you know what? Okay, last thing I'll say about this is that I have this friend. We were in Sun Valley, which is like a kind of hoity-toity city in Idaho where a lot of celebrities and people who have money have homes. And we were sitting at breakfast and there was a woman that was like kind of a couple tables down from us who had so clearly had so much plastic surgery, like facelifts and the lips. And she was probably like in her 60s, maybe even 70s. But it was so obvious that she was trying very hard to not age. And my friend Kelsey said that somebody had told her, either you can look old or you can look old and weird. And I just love that because it's like, yeah, you're not fooling anyone. Like we still know that you're like 60, 70, something like that. Like,
yes,
some people do age gracefully and it's probably really fun and cool for them. And I also don't think that it takes away anything in our life. Now, you know, physical insecurity, if we can boost that in some kind of way and you want to go get these things done, I mean, like all the power to you. I just think that the idea that everyone needs to be doing this in order to just keep up with the culture and the image of what's happening as a generation, that's where we get into a situation that has problems.
Those are such good points. And I feel like for women, it does sound a little bit like we're judging. But at the same time, I feel like it's important for us to say what we authentically feel. And as humans, we are always kind of looking and evaluating the things around us. And if we don't speak up and share what we authentically think and feel, other people might feel like they're alone in that thought or feeling. And it's tricky with, like you said, the Botox and the plastic surgery and all of that, because I think there are two levels that we're coming from. One is, how do we feel about ourselves? And the other is that threshold of it being harmful. And you're right. I tell Mike this all the time. And again, if you guys choose to do this, whatever. But it's just another perspective. For example, if you have, you know, fake boobs, fake eyelashes, fake hair. So you have extensions, you have eyelashes, you don't have real boobs. And like your face is Botox, no wrinkles, like all of this stuff. I tell Mike all the time, I'm like, you know that the way I look, you're comparing myself to things that aren't real. Like that's not real. And a part of me sometimes is frustrated by that because you don't necessarily know, but it's funny because Mike, he like hates the eyelashes. He hates them. He's like, what person thinks that these are attractive? I'm like, I don't know. There's people out there that probably do. We went to Disneyland and it was another level. It was another level. The eyelash game is strong at Disneyland. And it's so true. It's like, do you think that people think that those are your real eyelashes? I'm not really sure. But yeah, with the Botox thing, like you said, it's like, where is the line of, okay, I'm going to go do PRP, you know, which is facial stuff with they take your blood and spin it down, or like acupuncture for wrinkles and stuff. Because is there a way to still pursue feeling good in the sense of looking younger? But at the same time, it's like, you're not fooling anybody. You're meant to have wrinkles when you're older. And what is this thing that we're holding that feels... As women, it's hard.
Anti-aging is a really big industry. And
yeah, because you're being compared against people who aren't aging normally. If we were all in the same space, like that, I guess that's what I'm trying to get at in a roundabout way. If all women were just had their natural ways and were aging in their own natural ways, I feel like a lot of women would feel less bad about themselves because they're comparing. It's like when people compare themselves to Instagram filters. They're like really sad. And it's a really sad culture of people who bring this into their plastic surgeon and to all these places to be like, I want to look like this fake thing. And that's so sad because that's not what human beings are supposed to look like. But we're comparing that to each other. We're herd animals. We're trying to fit in. It's like the scariest thing for people to be different and to stand out. And it takes a lot of confidence and a lot of just, I don't know, a lot of stuff in general to be like, I am amazing and confident and beautiful despite looking different than what society says I should look like.
It also, to me, kind of like, I don't know, I feel like in the future, it's actually going to be kind of like a flex to just be confident in your own natural skin. And yeah, maybe I'm just saying that for myself because that's the route that I'm going to be.
That's the reality we're going to create for ourselves. Yeah. Well, you know, Pamela Anderson. So Pamela Anderson's a great example of this. Because in the 90s, she was the pinnacle of Barbie plastic, right? You know, huge fake boobs, plastic surgery, perfect, prim, proper, perfect 90s thing, which is really when that was so popular. And she's now embraced, you know, no Botox, no plastic surgery. She's gone all natural, no makeup even. She's all the way in that camp. Maybe I'll get there someday. But I feel like there is a new wave of beauty coming that is embracing our natural self. And so for anyone listening who feels pressured to do Botox because of society or because of all of that, you know, there might be a new wave coming. Maybe we'll be the leaders of it. Not that we're like that big, but just that it can be, we single-handedly will be the leaders. No. It can be a way. And just tuning in with yourself. I've had to have these conversations with patients around breast implants. And granted, there's a time and a place, you know, if you have a double mastectomy because of cancer or whatever, like there is a time and a place because, like you said, it's all about harm to benefit risk.
Yes.
Like, is it more harmful to your psyche to have both of your boobs cut off and have no breasts at all because the alternative is cancer, or having breast implants that may lead to like some issue or may not? Like that cost to benefit ratio is very different than a person who's 23, who's totally healthy and young and fine and wants to get breast implants, because now you're saying your body's normal and healthy now and you're introducing a foreign substance. That might not be as good of a situation as someone choosing breast implants because they have cancer. The alternative is way worse. So all of these things are so nuanced and you have to take that into account. Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious.
I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey.
Okay, well, let's I think that we fleshed that one out. I'm glad that you agree. I wasn't really sure where you were going to stand with that. I kind of figured, but good points, though, about this like individual cost to benefit ratio and how it affects different types of people in different types of subcultures. Like, I like that because some people aren't going to care, and that's okay, because there's other things that like I do not care about. Like, I do not care about, like, when I go out to eat, I'm not only choosing the restaurant that's seed oil free. That's something I do not do. If I happen to stumble upon one and I'm like, cool, great. But I am not going to not go because there is. But there, that's a different threshold. And some people would think I'm maybe being ignorant for that because they're like so convinced that seed oils are the absolute, you know, etiology of all illness. And I just don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, you and I are similar.
I also think like, okay, so this is one of our topics is the idea of like being natural, but not so intense about it that you're causing issue and harm to yourself. Like, and we have touched about this a little bit on the podcast in certain instances, because these examples come up for me in real life all the time where we're with people who are, you know, and maybe it's hard. I'm trying to not be, again, judgy, because maybe they have symptoms from these things. And when they do, and if I know that about them, it like makes a lot more sense. Like I was saying about the hair dye, it doesn't affect me. I don't get a headache. You probably would. And that does suck for you. So you need to not do that.
Yeah.
But I think that we can get really, I don't know, it's almost like it's an identity that people will hold on to so strongly that every single thing needs to be the absolutely cleanest, most organic, and that they need to know the ingredients of every single thing that they're potentially even going to put in their mouth or on their body or around them. And I mean, I know that we do talk about stuff like that, and I hope that we're not playing into this idea that that is how you have to function in the world, that we expect that that's what you're doing, that we even do that. I know, but we kind of do, but it's a little bit in the background because we're so used to it and it doesn't cause us stress. We're sort of like, if I'm at the grocery store and I'm looking at items and I can compare and choose one that's going to have no food dyes to the one that does have food dye. Like, okay, for instance, my kids don't drink Gatorade. They drink the Redmond Relight's kids. But once in a while, my son gets a Gatorade bought for him, or some parent brings a Gatorade and he drinks it. Do I freak out? No. But do I try to tell him, hey, you have this other option here and you know it. And we've talked about Gatorade in the past. And so please choose this where you can. And he's actually making the connection that it doesn't make him feel good, which is really cool because it's real. But I don't trip out. I don't freak out. But if I have the option, I'm not buying him Gatorade. I'm buying him good, clean electrolytes that are colored with vegetables and not food dyes. You know what I mean? But we don't need to like you had given the example one time where you're not going to take your daughter to like a birthday party and not let her have a piece of the cake. But she also doesn't have any issues against those foods. Now, if a child does, that's a different situation. So I just want to like say that out loud. Like that's obvious, right? But I just feel like I have to say it because some people are going to be like, well, but I can't do that because it's blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, well, I get it. But if that's not the case, like we just have to not worry about it. Like don't worry about sitting in traffic and breathing in the exhaust for 5 minutes. Don't worry about the wildfire that came through your town and for 2 days your AQI was above 100 and you breathed it for 15 minutes. Like don't let that take any mental space in your brain. Don't let it shoot your cortisol up for even 5 seconds. Whatever. It doesn't matter. In the grand scheme of things, you're going to completely forget that that happened anyway. Now, it's hard to balance though, because we do always talk about these little tiny decisions that we make that add up to overall less toxicity and whatever and blah, blah, blah. But I think that there's a lot of negative emotion that can come on with these decisions where that's the difference maker, I think. If you can take this sort of information, be empowered in it, choose the natural option where it's possible, and then not fill your brain with negative emotions when you're eating something that's not natural, that's when you win in this setting. Because we do know that that's real. Like if you have a constant negative self-talk, like, well, what's in this? Like, ew, do you even know what that's made out of? Like, what are you eating? It's like, no, I'm just enjoying the mint. Like, relax. It's going to be fine, you guys. I do not care. I have not thought about this for more than 5 seconds. I'm going to enjoy it. And that's it. You know?
Yeah, I have so much to say about this. I feel like what it all boils down to, and these two themes that we've talked about are actually connected. It's self-evaluating for yourself. There's a spectrum of no knowledge and ignorance and extreme knowledge and neuroses. Yeah. And it's finding for yourself where that happy medium balance is and the reason why. And I think the reason why is the most important thing. And let's bring up alcohol. Okay. So lack of ignorance, or like complete ignorance, is alcohol does nothing bad to my body. It's just like water. I can drink it all day, any day, right? And neuroses is like, I will not even take that herbal tincture because there's alcohol in it. And obviously, if you like are an alcoholic and you're working with sobriety and stuff like that, that's different. But just someone who's just like, I'm trying to be healthy, you know, like not even taking an herbal tincture because there might be alcohol in it, might be like the extreme. I'm just trying to imagine a situation. You have to set for yourself, okay, where is the balance between ignorance and neurosis of what feels good and why am I doing this? Is someone reaching for a glass of wine because they're depressed and because they're trying to drown out emotion and because they're trying to cover up their feelings? Or are you out with friends and you're choosing to engage in drinking alcohol because it's fun or it makes you feel good? Or maybe it doesn't make you feel good. And no amount of alcohol makes you feel good. And that just makes you feel better in your life. It brings you more joy to not have that drink because it's coming from a place of joy. And I teach this in Womanhood Wellness in my food intolerance section, because I think food intolerances are similar, where people can be completely ignorant. They have no idea that something like food dye or maybe for them gluten or something could be affecting their body, all the way to the neuroses where, like you said, I'm not even going to have the mint at the birth, you know, at the baby shower because I don't know like every single ingredient that's in it. And when you find out that foods maybe don't resonate with you or something isn't maybe the best for you, even with the Botox, even with the Gatorade, even with any of it, it's like, okay, you need to know, you can't be ignorant, but how do we pull back that neuroses and get to a place of I'm choosing this out of joy? If you're making a choice with the health stuff out of fear and anxiety, that brings a very different energy. For example, if you go to a restaurant, it's an Italian restaurant, they put down bread, you know that gluten doesn't make your body feel very good. And you're sitting there the whole time so sad and depressed and you're like, all I want in the whole world is that bread. And I'm so stressed and I'm so anxious. I can't even be here. Like, I can't even be out at dinner because like there's the bread and like I can't eat it. And, you know, maybe it's touched something else and there's all of these things and I don't know, but I really want it. Like the intensive emotions that come up when people are removing food from their diet that maybe doesn't make them feel good versus being so happy, seeing that bread and being like, you know what? I could eat that bread. That is a choice that I have. It brings me more joy to not eat the bread because I actually feel better in my body and about myself when I don't have that in my system.
Yes.
That's such a different energy and it takes away the neuroses of the anxiety and it instead brings in this joy. And the same thing could go with beauty stuff. Am I choosing to get Botox because I feel bad that I'm ugly, that I'm not good enough, that I'm less than? Or am I choosing this, you know, treatment because it actually brings me more joy because I just love the way that it makes me feel? Like that might be the deciding factor, not what's happening in society, but how you actually feel.
I love that. I think that that is totally the key to all of this, actually, because then you're making an empowered choice. Because what I see a lot of right now, and I know you do too, is the opposite, where people are making the choice out of fear and anxiety. And they're so anxious about every single thing. And they're so like, there's so much revved up emotion about it. Like maybe it's even anger too, where they're like, this is dumb. This is stupid. This is ruining our society. Like, da 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 da. And it's like, no, like when I think about not getting Botox, the feeling that I have is joy, like you said, where I'm like, no, I'm making that conscious choice and decision to embrace whatever is happening on my face and to not sort of like given, because I think if I did get Botox, it would be in a situation where I was like caught up in feeling insecure about something and felt like I was falling behind in what was going on in the culture. And it, because it wouldn't, at least where I stand right now, it wouldn't be coming from a place of me being like, this is going to help me feel a confidence boost. And it would make me feel like I was doing it and I was playing myself and my values too. And just like a deeper sense too, because like that's what's important to me. More on the side of like, again, the emotional expression and being able to have an emotive face. And, you know, I'm really big with my energy and my emotions. And I think that that's, it's not something I want to dull down, but you're so right. It is this little mindset switch. I say little because it's on such a It's like there's a very, very thin line. It's like, are you above the water mm-hmm. or below the water? Like that edge yep. of being above water or below water is so thin. And yeah. this edge of where you are with this decision making, are you making it out of a place of feeling really confident and joyous and you're just going to have a good time with it? Or are you filling your brain with, well, what is that? We shouldn't say that. We shouldn't do that. Don't eat that. Blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh my God, how exhausting is it to live in that kind of a way? And yeah. unfortunately, there's a lot of people that are really, really, really caught up in that. And they feel mm-hmm. even just like with all the political stuff going on right now, and they yeah. go down these rabbit holes. And instead of it feeling maybe empowering to them to have knowledge about sort of the bigger systems at play in our world and what's actually happening and who really has the power and how is it all going down, it can feel really scary and wild, and they can get very caught up. I mean, COVID, I know, changed a lot of things for a lot of people in that mm-hmm. way. And it's the same thing with all these little decisions. Like, just choose and move forward in a way that feels good, because your emotional state about it probably has a lot more effect than even like maybe the chemical exposure or whatever it is.
Yep.
Like, if you're
yeah.
eating a if you're eating a gorgeous, beautiful, local grass-fed hamburger, but you're beating yourself up about like something to do with it, I don't even know what, like it didn't...
Seed oils in the fries or something.
Right, exactly. Like, you've just played yourself. You've taken out an opportunity that could have been great and nourishing for your body and your soul and your whole energy sphere, and now you've put this like negative low-vibe signature on it for literally no reason other than just like your own anxieties. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know the solution to addressing the anxieties, because it is hard for people who are just learning about this kind of stuff, especially where there's so much to learn. It feels really overwhelming, and maybe they don't have the background knowledge. I think it's also very confusing what's happening right now with social media. There's so much mm-hmm. exact conflicting information where you'll open it up and one thing says this and then the next thing says the exact opposite statement, and both people or sources are 100% confident in what they're saying. And you're like, well, how can that yeah. be? Like, I get it. It is hard.
And somewhat credible. Yeah, it's so tricky.
Well, you know what? And I will say too, is for both you and I, is literally this is why we've created our programs.
Yes.
Because 100%. For you, you've created your Womanhood Wellness membership so that people don't have to do all of this exhausting internet Googling, trying to figure out what's going on for their situations with their preconception, fertility, menstrual issues, low libido, painful sex, painful periods, anything that's going along with that, IVF, infertility struggles, just in regular fertility stuff. And then for me, it's the same thing with the pregnancy, birth, postpartum. It's like, that's the whole reason why I created this, because battling constantly the Instagram DMs of people being like, well, what about this? What about that? Da, da, da. And I'm like, wow, it must be really hard to navigate trying to have a healthy, balanced mindset out there on the internet right now because of how yeah. absurd some of the content is getting.
Really? Yeah, it is. I mean, and we have like decades of our own knowledge, not only professionally, being doctors, seeing patients, doing all of that, but also our own journey that we've been on for so long. And you're right, we forget if someone's starting brand new. It's like, I can't even imagine if you're just learning this stuff and hearing such conflicting information, that would be so hard. And that brings me up to our next question, at least, that was given to me, is just understanding the nuance between fertility treatment and not. And if we go back to the spectrum that I talked about, of ignorance, but I don't say ignorance in a bad way, just more like not knowing versus being more obsessive, let's just say. The person not knowing is someone maybe who's been trying to conceive, has had zero, you know, investigation, no labs. They don't know any of the stuff to actually improve health for them or their partner. There's just like a complete lack of knowing. It is 12 months have passed. They've been diagnosed now with infertility and they're told to just do IVF, right? There's just like zero knowledge. They're just pushed right into the conventional fertility treatment. Versus on the other side, someone who's maybe been trying naturally for like 8 years and has done all the things and would probably be able to have a baby in 1 year if they would just consider something like IVF. And how do you find that middle ground? And I've had both. Right. I've had both patients in my practice. I've supported women on both spectrums. And it's tricky because it's not like I'm going to say, oh, you're struggling to conceive. Go take a bunch of ovulation meds and go do IVF and do all of these things, because that to me is doing more harm than good, because there's nothing else that's been supported. And we're on that spectrum again of there's more harm than good there. But then in the obsessive space, which is totally your choice. I mean, some people just choose not to do IVF and fertility treatments for like religious reasons and other things like that, which is fine. But if it's because they're so afraid of anything conventional, of anything that's like not super crunchy and super natural, it's like, okay, there's a middle ground that can be found of yes. us giving up a little bit of that so that we can have the life that we want, right? With that means having a baby.
Yes, it's there. The dogma. It's just being so beholden to a dogma, and it's like you got to really ask yourself why. And again, like you said, if there's some sort of religious thing, it's like no, it's we would never look into IVF. It's like okay, fine. But like you said, like if it's maybe because there's shame around it, or I mean, the money is obviously one component. But if you have the means and you're just not, and you're going to have a whole life long, like maybe of having no children, and you really, really, really wanted them, and it's gonna potentially, you know, ruin your relationship or like whatever. It's just, it's like, let's zoom out a bit and just think life doesn't always go the way that we want it to. And that's hard to come to terms with those sorts of moments, those roadblocks, and to have to pivot from what you thought it was gonna look like and go a different way. And nobody wishes for that upon themselves, but almost all people will experience it to some extent to another. And it's okay. Like just being crunchy just for the hell of it can cause suffering just in the exact same way. The net harm can be exactly the same as being so conventional and mindless that you never question anything and you just go along with all the American standard diet stuff.
Did you know that while 97% of women take a prenatal vitamin, over 95% are still deficient? That's why I love recommending Needed's prenatal. Unlike most prenatals, Needed doses nutrients in the right forms and amounts that go above and beyond to really support both mama and baby. I actually worked with Needed for years. We spent over 3 years researching, working with practitioners, and really intentionally choosing every single nutrient form and dosage that's put into the prenatal. And now we have the data to back it up. In an IRB study, they found that the women who took the Needed prenatal had higher blood levels of key nutrients like vitamin B6, vitamin D, vitamin B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2, and selenium, compared to women who are taking a regular prenatal. Even more powerful, only the Needed group had significant amounts of vitamin D in their system, which is essential for supporting the immune system, bone development, blood pressure regulation, and so much more. This study reinforces what we've known for a long time, that real nourishment really makes a difference, and the proper nutrients support fertility, pregnancy, and baby's health. Needed isn't just aiming for adequacy, they're supporting what's possible. No matter where you are along your fertility or pregnancy journey, Needed is what I recommend. Head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% on your first subscription order. Again, head to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. Okay, now back to the show. And that brings me to my next question for you, which is being conscious raising our children. Because again, this is another spectrum where on one end, you can have zero knowledge about anything, about how your words, your actions, anything impact your kids, or about how you say things or how you guide them or how to help them process their emotions or any of that. Like you could be completely clueless, or you could be so in extreme where it's like there are no boundaries. There's like nothing. And like, how do you do that? And just I feel like life exists in the middle on all these topics.
Yes.
When it comes to health.
Agreed.
But even just like being present, like with you, with your kids, and, you know, like the extreme would be, well, I give my kid 100% of my time and I don't do anything else and there's nothing else that's going on. And it's like, that's not a reality either, especially when you have more kids or you have to work as well. Like,
I know. I you know, I don't know if I'm doing it right. I'm trying to do the best that I can. But I think that sort of no matter what, there's always going to be some level of mom guilt in some direction. And for me, it's like I spend a lot more time with them when they're younger, like little younger, you know, the way that Sunday is right now, how she's almost two. It's been so heavy with her for the last 2 years. I think that makes sense. I think that's probably what happens in almost all families. But in the interview that I did with Ralphie Jacobs about sibling rivalry, which we'll link in the show notes, she said something that I've kind of obsessively thought about since, which was that her mom was a psychologist, child psychologist. Mm. And when Ralphie was having her own children, always told her, older children trump the baby.
Oh.
Older children trump the baby. And
interesting.
What she meant by that was like your attention should not leave the older kids. And you have to still prioritize them over the baby, like often, or at least in the back of your mind, be thinking about that. And that is not something that I have been doing. And I feel really guilty about that. And I know that sharing or feeling the guilt is not helpful. And so really all I can do is move forward with this information because it does make a lot of sense. And, you know, they are in a developmental stage. Like my almost 10-year-old right now is at a developmental stage where like he's going to remember every single thing now that pretty much happens to him. And he's mm-hmm. going through so much and he needs us. Like he needs us there. And although it feels like, yeah, Sunday needs us to literally do everything for her and she's a baby and she needs a lot of like contact and all that kind of stuff, he is on the opposite side of that and has all these like emotional cognitive needs and to feel protected and also to be able to like spread his wings a little bit, but have no, he has mom and dad have his back. And like, you know, there's all these different things you're trying to balance at all times. That's just been one thing that I've been thinking about recently, but I am not the kind of mom that like sits on the ground and plays with my kids. Like I do not mm-hmm. do that. I go places with them and then I set them up. And when I say that, like I'll say those terms to them. I like set them up with like a vibe, like a cool thing to do. Like it's one of my favorite things in the summer to like set up the splash pad and the music and make them like a cool snack plate and bubbles. And like I'm there and I'm kind of interacting with them and they're talking to me constantly. They're showing me things, they're telling me stuff, they're finding me rocks, they're changing the song, they're asking, you know, we're interacting a lot, but I'm not like on the splash pad with them. Now, Wes, mm-hmm. and this is maybe just like our personality types, there is also something to be said too about like the way that traditional like hetero couples, moms and dads play with their kids and how it's different. And like dads are often a lot more like physical in their play and moms are more on the nurturing side or whatever. And I would say that that in our family is so true. Like I do not play. I do not wrestle. I don't like it. I actually hate it. I actually like totally. Despise it. I'll dance and stuff. But, you know, like as we have more kids too, the way I have to organize it in my brain, especially with working, which is something that I want to talk about too, is mm-hmm. like, how can I, this is something that I have to actively battle in myself because I think it's dysfunctional sometimes, is my default sometimes is like, I'm trying to constantly be able to fit in like a little bit more work and all these little gaps in our day. And so I will try to like set them up again with something to do, the older three. And then like Sunny is maybe playing by herself, maybe she's involved with it, like she's doing whatever, but I kind of like keep them in these two groups. It's like the older three and then her, and much more of my attention is going back and forth to her and then to my work, to her and to the work. And then I like check mm-hmm. in with the older three like once in a while and I'm like, where are they? What are they doing? Like, da, da, da. And they're mm-hmm. kind of like a little pack, but I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just the way that I've organized it in my brain right now, but I do feel like I could have more one-on-one time with them, you know, and mm-hmm. as there's more kids in the family, that happens very infrequently. Like you have to make a real concerted effort to have one-on-one time where maybe you yeah. are just taking one kid on like an errand or something. And it's kind of almost weird because they function as such a group mm-hmm. that it's almost like I'm not used to my own kid, like in a one-on-one sense. You know what I mean? I know that sounds bad, but it is the way I feel.
I mean, it makes sense because you're like a pod, but it is different than my experience, right? Of only having two, and my daughter who is very social and needs us like to play with her all the time. It actually makes it really hard to work because she doesn't have another sibling to play with. And obviously Cade is younger, he's 9 months, so they don't really play a lot yet, but she gets a lot of one-on-one time with us. And moving forward, if we only have two kids, they probably both will get a lot of one-on-one time. Like, for example, I lay with her every night and I read to her, you know, 4 or 5 books every night. Like she gets that undivided attention from me. But I wonder in my mind, I'm like, okay, what if we had more kids? Like I wouldn't be able to do that because I would be with the baby. And that's so sad that like I wouldn't be able to be with her anymore. And it's just like, how do you do that? It's a question I actually had of how do you still give your child presence when you literally don't, there's only one of you and more of them. And that is really tricky. But
yeah, I mean, that is something that my kids don't get. They do not get us reading 4 or 5 books to them every night, like not a chance. And we yeah. could probably fit that in. It just feels not like a thing, especially not individually.
Yeah, I mean, like, how would you?
Yeah, bedtime would be like a 2 hour long adventure. And that's one of my strong boundaries. Like bedtime, I cannot have bedtime be the peak main connection point of the day. And yeah. My girls are all really good and easy to get down. Easy meaning like it's quick, and they have their own little things that they want, like back scratches and songs, and like we kind of have our routines and whatever it is. But my son is the one who really perks up at night, and he wants to have all of his, he like saves it. He like saves it for while he's at his bed. And then that's when he wants to tell me about something that happened at school or some deep emotional thing. And my mom has told me this, that my brother, so her, you know, son also did the same thing, that at nighttime was when he would feel the most open. And so I think that I have to just get over it. I have to just suck it up. That's when I'm going to get my one-on-one connection with him, because specifically with him, he is like out and about. He's outside. He's with the cousins. He's, mm-hmm. you know, like it's very hard to get, and he's just plays differently and stuff. Whereas the girls, you know, like they want to sit in my lap still, and they're 6 and 4, almost 7 and 5. And they're just kind of like around. They want me to paint their nails. They want me to do their hair. Like, you know, they're just around me a lot more often in the day. Mm-hmm. And, but no, they do not like, that is the benefit of having fewer children, is that there is so much more of that one-on-one time. And, you know, there's pros and cons to it all, but it's something that I think about where I'm just like, if I didn't want to work, it would be different, but that's just not the reality either. Like I do want to work.
I was going to say there's pros and cons. Your pro is that you can set your kids up to go play together. Yeah. So you can work. And right. Mine, I can't. It's so sad. And so we definitely use more screen time than I think we should in those situations. Mm. And it's why I've made decisions to put her in like preschool, because she is so social. She just wants to be with people, and rightfully so. You know, she needs that connection. And so if I can't give that to her in every moment, like during my work time, then what do you do? It's tricky.
Yeah, I don't know. And working as a mom without like full-time childcare or them in a normal school is like the craziest balancing thing that I've ever had to do. I wouldn't change it for a million years the way that we're working it, because I want to be around my kids. It's like I want to have all the things. And so, and I want to homeschool them. But I do make myself crazy though. Like I have peak stress moments sometimes where I'm just like, this is nuts. And I know you do too. And it's like something that this is probably where we're a little bit crazy. Like we're a little bit, we should probably let go, but we just won't.
Yeah. I mean, even though, you know, work-wise, you know, work for us is a little bit more of a privilege in the sense that some people, they don't have an option at all. They can't pivot. They can't work from home. They can't do things on their own schedule. Like they have to be somewhere 9 to 5, or they have to travel or whatever. And that would be really hard for me personally. Everyone has to do what they have to do, you know, for their family and financially and all of that. But it is tricky being a working mother. And it was tricky being a working person going through fertility too. So for anyone listening, everyone has their thing, right? Everyone has their thing that they're working on that pushes them. And I have my own thoughts about it too, in the sense that I do think we have vehicles of growth, is what I call them, in our life, that push our soul to become a better version of itself or to realize something or whatever it is. I don't think life is meant to just be so easy in every capacity that there's literally no challenge and no growth or exploration. And for some people, that might be their health. For some people, it might be their relationship. It might be parenting. It might be their fertility journey. It might be navigating interpersonal relationships with someone in their family or a child or something. I do think everybody kind of has their thing. Hopefully you don't have like lots of them. It's just like you've got your one thing or whatever. For me, my thing has been health and work. And it just wasn't really relationships that much. That hasn't been the thing that, yes, like relationships with my husband have been challenged through the hardship, but more because of my health and his health and that journey. And because of work and those situations, not necessarily because we aren't well fit together or things like that. And so I think I just have more struggle in that area, not only because of just the way that I think, but maybe it's on a soul level, or maybe that's just an excuse I have for myself as to why work seems hard sometimes. But it is challenging when you then throw in either trying to conceive, because in my mind, I see the trying to conceive season as you're trying to create space for it. For a child. And energetically, even though you don't have a baby yet, it consumes so much of you and it consumes so much of your energy and your effort and your time that it almost feels like you do, but you don't get the beautiful benefit of the baby. You just have all the hardship and the time and the like suffering part, but it still consumes a big chunk of you. And for me, work was really hard when I was going through our 6 years of infertility. And then, I mean, it was a decade, right? Because 6 years before we did IVF and then 4 years of navigating IVF and having our two children. And so like the going into the IVF and the losses and the, you know, the praying that it's going to work and like that whole thing. It's like also trying to work on top of that. It's insane.
Well, and like you would have to go for like ultrasounds all the time. And like, you know what
constantly.
I mean? Like very disruptive, like the blood draws and stuff. And it wasn't just, oh yeah, you'd go home at night and have sex. Like it was, which would feel like a lot less work and, you know, wouldn't overconsume your working life and things like that. But the way that it is when you're going through these fertility treatments, it's like, how do they expect you to manage this? Like, you just have to come in at this time. It was like 11:30 in the morning. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's totally true. And I feel like as well with fertility stuff, you know, even having sex at a certain time, it's like, oh, my husband's home from a business trip. I'm ovulating. We have to have sex. It's crazy. So I feel like at the end of the day, all of these conversations have a similar theme, which is there's extremes on both ends. And how do we find this happy medium in the middle? And we kind of have to evaluate that for ourselves. We need the knowledge to do so, which is what we provide a lot in our programs and all of that, but also the real life groundedness of to not become crazy about it and just finding that happy medium in all of these different situations.
Yeah, and intersecting it with the reality of your life too, because you might have an idea in the education around, like with birth specifically, I talk about this a lot in my programs, is, you know, you can know all the things and you have a plan. And I think it's important to have a plan and to have a vision. And then you're going to go into the experience and you may need to pivot, and that's okay. And so with all of these, like, it's like there's a little toggle, there's a line, like the far ends of the cap are the extremes. And then there's a little toggle and everybody's going to be in a different place. Mm-hmm. And what I think is also true is that most people are in the middle with all of these issues in certain regards. But the way that it's painted to us culturally and in the media and things is that you have to pick a side. You have to pick one or the other and you have to be very mm-hmm. extreme in that side. And it's just not true. And it's just not even like it causes dysfunction. It causes disease. It causes all these different things. And that's kind of like our point is, you know, you have to kind of find your own way to be in the balance middle. And maybe for you, your like middle is actually farther leaning to one particular side. And like, that's okay. It's almost like in Ayurveda, how everybody has their doshas, their profile of their, you know, Vata, Pitta, Kapha. And you have to kind of stay in like your lane, like where you fit with that. The idea is not to make them all three the same. It's that you live within the like blueprint proportions that you were given when you were born and you mm-hmm. stay within that. And same thing with all of these kinds of things. So anyway, I love that. I think this was kind of like a fun, different sort of episode, and we hope you guys enjoy it too.
Yes, thank you.
Bye.
Guess what? We have a merch store. We sell amazing things like hats and shirts and sweatshirts, crop sweatshirts, glassware, water bottles, journals, bags, and they're really cool. So you should definitely check that out. Healthy as a Mother, I think, is one of the coolest brands. Healthy as a Mother, blank, we don't really say that, but so good because we love helping women become mothers, helping women who are mothers. And it's really fun to not only have a cool saying on some of your merchandise, but it also helps spread the word so that we can continue to do this amazing work in the world. We absolutely love podcasting, and it is so much effort on our part. And so every little bit of your support helps. If you want to check out some amazing merchandise or maybe buy a gift for a friend or a loved one or get something for yourself, head to healthyasamother.com/store. Check it out. Take pictures of your merchandise, tag us on Instagram. We would love to hear feedback on if there's other things that you would like to see in the store, because we are doing this for you. So again, head to healthyasamother.com/store to check out that merchandise. And yeah, I hope that you enjoy it. Thank you so much. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.